You're listening to The 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai. On Monday, the Department of Justice indicted four Chinese military officers for stealing data and trade secrets from the American credit giant Equifax. You may have heard our segment about credit scores yesterday and why some of those corporate algorithms are so secret. Stay with me now. Also on yesterday's show, we talked about a lawsuit that Monsanto is facing regarding their proprietary agricultural products. Well, we are going to marry those two segments in our next story, a tale of Chinese corporate espionage leveled against companies like Monsanto and fought over Illinois cornfields. Mara Vistendahl is with us to discuss why one Chinese company was so desperate to steal corn seeds from Iowa and Illinois. She's the author of The Scientist and the Spy, a true story of China, the FBI, and industrial espionage, which was released last week. Thanks for joining us, Mara.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it is our pleasure. So you spent much of your life in China as a science reporter, but you're originally from the Midwest, rah-rah Midwest. So from the time you first moved to China to today, how's the role of agriculture changed there? We just want to get some background.
Sure. So China, as it's developed, people are eating higher and higher up the food chain, eating more meat, eating a diet that looks more like that of Americans. And that requires more grain and animal feed. And so as China's developed, the dependence on agricultural products from the United States has increased because China has a very large population and relatively little arable land.
And then why can't they just grow their own seed, buy their own seed? What's the need for importing them illegally?
Well, the other issue is that, you know, these high-quality hybrid seeds take a long time to develop. You know, it takes 6 to 8 years to get them in the pipeline. And so in my book, I look at a company called DBN, a Beijing agricultural company that hatches this plan to literally steal the seeds out of the ground instead of doing the research themselves.
Right. So your book starts with a Chinese man walking through an Iowa cornfield, and it just takes off from there.
That's right. It's
a great scene. There's also a scene in your book that takes place at the Texas Roadhouse in Forsyth, Illinois, just north of Decatur. A local agronomist named Kevin Montgomery was being interviewed for a job with three Chinese men. Tell us what happened at that Texas Roadhouse in 2011.
Right. So Kevin is a farmer and a seed breeder who had worked for several large seed companies. And then when he was laid off in consolidation, he went into business on his own as a consultant. So DBN hired him as a consultant. They actually bought a farm outside Chicago, and then Kevin's job was to grow hybrids on this farm. Now, he was not involved with the illegal activities of the company, and he had no awareness of what was happening. So in a way, he was kind of the useful stooge of the operation. As time went on, he did develop more questions in his mind about what was happening. And then eventually the FBI knocked on his door one day as he was coming in from the fields and started asking him questions.
And okay, so we should also just say that the main character in your book, Robert Moe, is Kevin's boss. He's now serving time in jail. But when the FBI knocked on Kevin's door, they assured him he wasn't spying, just, quote unquote, keeping them in the loop. Can you tell us more about Kevin's relationship with the FBI Chicago field office?
He eventually came up reluctant informant for the FBI. He you know, passed on what he knew about the company. They told him, you know, just keep doing your job as a consultant, and then let us know what happens along the way. So he played this interesting role of being sort of between these two sides. And when I retold this story, I also spent a lot of time retracing the steps of Robert Moore, who spent a long time crisscrossing the Midwest looking for seed lines and digging corn out of the ground. And I tried to tell the story from all sides.
Right.
So from the perspective of Robert Moore, from the perspective of the special agent who pursued him, and also from Kevin's perspective.
So where exactly is the crime in this story? I believe it's with Robert Moa, but I want you, the expert, to tell me.
That's right. Robert Moa was charged with economic espionage, so with stealing trade secrets from Monsanto and DuPont Pioneer. Those are the two companies involved in the case. One of the questions I wanted to raise in the book was why did this particular case provoke such an outsized reaction from the FBI? So the FBI spent 2 years pursuing him, used car chases, surveillance planes, flying over the cornfields at various points. They collected evidence using a FISA warrant, which is typically reserved for extreme national security threats like terrorism. So this is a very big case for the Bureau.
And expensive, it sounds like.
Yes, I could not get the exact figure of the amount of money that was spent, but, you know, I spent several years just retracing people's steps in the case. And so, you know, it spanned multiple states. There were dozens of agents involved. There were airport busts, including one at the Chicago airport, and you know, so it was a very dramatic case.
Well, yes, but also on the other hand, you know, a lot of people think of espionage; they think of James Bond, and now it sounds like most of the world's espionage is more of what's in your book: corporations stealing trade secrets across borders. No.
Well, the James Bond type spying is still happening.
Thank goodness.
Well. And, you know, China. Yeah, we need that for Hollywood fodder. You know, China has devoted a lot of effort to stealing both national security secrets and trade secrets. The Justice Department has shifted its focus in some ways, and for the FBI specifically, trade secret theft from China is now one of its top priorities. And so as the FBI has become more of a counterintelligence organization, they have taken on over 1,000 active investigations involving China. So that's just a massive number.
It is. And that begs a question, how does racial profiling factor into this kind of thing?
Yes, as I started researching this case, there were dozens of others being brought involving ethnic Chinese scientists in the United States. And in the case of Robert Moore, you know, he did commit this crime. He was not racially profiled. But there were other scientists who had the experience of the FBI showing up on their doorstep. And then it turned out that they were completely innocent. You know, in some cases, they were arrested with guns drawn. So just very dramatic arrests that ruined their lives in some ways. And so there is concern among the Chinese American science community that people are being singled out for attention.
And so in light of that, what is the vacuum cleaner approach?
That is an old counterintelligence theory that China would collect secrets by dispatching just thousands of its people to collect small amounts of information from the United States. That's an approach that's now being dismissed as tinged with racism,
mm-hmm.
And also, you know, inaccurate at the end of the day, because there have been a number of cases involving non-ethnic Chinese. And also, you know, China, in many ways, when you look at the national security spying, they spy much like the United States or Russia, our previous major adversary.
Mm-hmm. And that takes into account this idea of yellow peril that's all tied in together, right?
Right. I mean, there's concern that that theory is rooted in these historical tropes, these racist tropes,
right,
you know, going back to the 19th century. And you know, as tensions are rising with China right now, there is a lot of fear in the foreign-born research population here. And you know, one issue that we need to keep in mind is that Chinese American scientists make up a very sizable proportion of our research force. So if
sure.
the end goal of these cases is protecting innovation in America, you have to make sure that people do not feel unfairly targeted.
At the end of your book, you highlight the irony that the FBI spent untold sums of money to defend Monsanto's intellectual property, as we already touched on, only for it to be bought by a German company, Bayer. Yesterday on the show, we also had a segment about how Monsanto has been caught up in lawsuits around its dicamba products. Last year, there were headlines about Roundup causing cancer. You know, the company's weathered a lot of storms, so I'm wondering, don't they have enough of their own resources, deep pockets, to defend their own intellectual property?
Yeah, the interesting thing about these cases is that when economic espionage became a federal crime in the 1990s, the U.S. government began assuming the legal costs for the victim companies, quote unquote, in the cases. And so in this case, that's Monsanto. And when you look at the seed industry in particular, have to keep in mind that this is an industry that has become less and less competitive over the past few years, you know, as we've gone from dozens of seed companies to just four controlling most of the industry. And as, you know, Monsanto was acquired by Bayer, DuPont merged with Dow, the amount of money as a proportion of sales of these companies spend on research has declined.
Okay, so knowing what you know now, having reported the book, with all of the antitrust concerns stateside and corn being a big part of the U.S. trade war with China, what do you think will give or bend on either side that will give Illinois farmers and corn consumers, which is all of us really, some peace of mind?
Well, the trade war has really underscored just how complicated our relationship with China is. Industrial espionage was one of the ostensible drivers for the trade war. You know, the other is that President Trump is just very fond of trade wars and thinks that they're easy to win. And as we've seen, they can often result in these really protracted battles. In the end, you know, farmers have been very hard hit by the tariffs that China imposed in retaliation. And so, you know, we're at this moment where, as tensions are rising, many people would like to step back from our involvement with China. But it's going to be very complicated.
Mm-hmm. And your book mentions how there isn't a lot of local competition. Mom-and-pop seed breeders have all gone out of business. But we're going to have to wrap it up there, because that's all the time we have, but we could talk about this for a very long time. Mara Vistendahl is the author of The Scientist and the Spy, a true story of China, the FBI, and industrial espionage. The book was just released last week. Mara, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you again for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. That's all the time we have for today. Follow us on Twitter. Search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. On our Facebook page, search for the 21st to like us. You can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you want to hear and ask on the air. All of those links and every other way to contact us. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, or follow us on social media, just go to our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got all of our past shows there. We're produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, and Julian Haida. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Gwen Maxey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.